I am doing well. This story is called The Beloved Daughter. And there's an illustration up here, and I'll try to show you my illustration as well. Where's father gone? He promised to stay with me. The girl looked forlornly into her mother's eyes. She felt very ill. She wanted both her parents to be there at her bedside. He's gone to get help, comforted the mother. He'll return as quickly as he can. As quickly as I can, Jairus was thinking to himself. I must get back to my daughter as quickly as I can, but I can hardly move through this crowd. He was squeezing himself through a great crush of people who had gathered on the lakeshore to see Jesus. Some of the people recognized him and let him past, for he was an official at the local synagogue. Others had come from goodness knows where, and they stood firm, elbowing him aside without a glance. Please, please let me through. My daughter is dying. I need to see Jesus. Tears were streaming down from Jairus' face. Then suddenly he was there, right at Jesus' feet. Jairus fell to his knees. Please help me, he wept. My only daughter is dying, and she's just 12. Please, can you heal her? Jesus smiled and nodded, but Jairus found it almost impossible to lead him anywhere through the jostling crowd, where grown-ups tugged at both of them, and children reached out to touch the man who, it was said, could work miracles. Then, all at once, Jesus stopped. Someone touched me, he said. Who was it? His look was sharp and piercing, and for a moment the crowd stepped back, shaking their heads. One of his disciples, Peter, simply laughed. There are crowds around you, Jesus, he said. It could have been anyone. When I was touched, power went out from me, said Jesus. Then one woman stepped forward and bent low. I have been suffering for 12 years, she murmured. But when I touched the edge of your cloak, I was well again. Jesus smiled. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace, he said. And now, let us hurry, urged Jesus. As Jairus turned to lead Jesus to his home, a servant arrived. Your daughter, he said, has died. The teacher doesn't need to come now. Jairus began to sob, but Jesus simply put a hand on his shoulder. Don't be afraid, he said. Only believe, and she will be well. When they reached Jairus' home, the mourners had already arrived and were wailing noisily to make it known the grief of those who wept within. Jesus sent them away and went inside the house with the girl's father and three of his disciples. He took the girl's limp hand. Get up, my child, he said. She blinked her eyes and sat up and said, Father's back, and I'm really hungry. She is yours to take care of, said John.
Thanks for coming up.
Thank you, Julianne, and kids. And Pastor Kristen has some announcements for us now, so she'll come up for that.
Before we do the announcements, there have been some sad and scary things that have been happening in Rwanda with some of the Congolese refugees that have settled in Rwanda. Mama Naomi, would you mind coming forward so that you can explain it a little better than I can, and then we can pray?
Sorry, my voice is not good, but I try. No, that's okay. The things we would like to request is to pray for other relatives, people, refugee from Congo, and they are in Rwanda refugee camp. So they've been having trouble in the country, and they've been changing a lot of things for them, and they struggle, and after they do that, instead of handling well on that situation, So they started filing them, and a lot of people of them, they been killed, and a lot of people, because there was a lot of things, the reason they distracted is because they are asking them to become Rwanda citizen, and they didn't want to be that, and they ask if they can let them go back home, or if they can have another country have them like as refugee, because they didn't give them any more enough food or whatever they need. So, but they killed a lot of people, innocent kids and mother, father. So we are been praying all people, even if we are here, we are peace, but we still think about them and pray for them. So we will request for everyone to pray for those people, have the way your God can help them in God's way, whatever God will, the way he will give them, we appreciate it. Yeah, I can pray. Uiteka mana yacigira neza. Uiteka mana ishoboye byose. Tuje imbere y'amaso yawe twicishije bugufi imbere y'amaso yawe data. Turakwereka abavandimwe bacu bari muri kiriya gihugu cy'u Rwanda ariko mana batagifitemo amahoro. Uiteka mana yacu basango bagendere rubafashe. Turakwereka amaraso y'inzira karengane buri munsi mana yacu ameneka. Mana ubagirire neza ubasanga bafashe ababuze abana babuze ababyeyi ababuze abo bavukana mana ubasange uwiteka mana ubaha amahoro ni wowe ushobora kubacira inzira twebwe ntacyo dushoboye kandi ntacyo twobafasha ariko turabasabira amahoro turabasabira ngo ubahe umutekano turasaba ngo ubahe icyo byifuza byose uwiteka mana yacu turabakweretse bose mana Uwiteka n'abakiriho ariko badafite icyo barya n'icyo bambara twebwe ntacyo twatanze turi aha muri iki gihugu ahubwo ni urukundo rwawe n'ubushake bwawe watugiriye data tukaba turi aha muri iki gihugu ngaho mana turabakweretse mana ngo basange bafashe ubagirire neza abananiwe n'abarushe bose mana waravuze ngo nituzane ibitugoye n'ibituruhije imbere y'amaso ya kuko ubishoboye data twabwira aba bantu ariko ntacyo bashoboye ariko ikikuru turakwereka ijambo riri mutima yacu turababaye cyane kubwa bene data mana basange kandi ubafashe ubahumurize kandi ubahe nibyo bifuza byose urabikoze kuko byumvise kandi ukaba ubikoze amen.
Thank you. When we live in a world where things like that happens, it's good to know and to remind each other of the stories of Jesus who is with us and Jesus who knows us and knows the heartbreak of our world. And so some of the ways that we are telling those stories to each other, I wanted to let you know about. One is that coming up in a few weeks, it will be the highlight season of our church calendar. We call it Holy Week. And there will be some special services that week. Palm Sunday on March 25. Thursday evening, March 29, we will be having a service here where we remember the night before Jesus was arrested when he shared a meal with his disciples and then he washed his disciples' feet. So we will also share a simple meal with each other, and we will wash one another's feet on that evening. You are all invited to come. Then the next evening, we will have another service where it's Good Friday. We will remember the day that Jesus was arrested and tried and crucified and died, and we will tell that story to each other here in this room. And then Sunday morning, April 1, Resurrection Easter Sunday, we will celebrate the victory of Jesus who was raised from the dead. And I'm mentioning this to you a little bit ahead of time because there's a lot of opportunities for any of you that would like to be involved creatively, musically, if you want to be an actor, if you want to help make food, if you want to help plan some creative visual things we're doing. If you're interested in being a part of any of that, you can just let me know, and I will point you in the direction of the person who you can talk to join in. Another way that we're telling the story of Jesus right now is this Lenten season. Many of us have decided that we are promising each other as a church that we will read the Gospel of Mark before Easter Sunday. You can read it in any language. You can listen to it. There's some sheets back by the door there where it has links to our website and also other links if you want to listen to it. This is the list of people so far who have promised the church that they are going to read the Gospel of Mark by Easter. It's not too late. It only takes about 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours to read. So there is time before Easter to do it. There is. You can still sign up. If you want to be a part of this commitment to your sisters and brothers, Julian, would you hold up right by the door there? There's some commitment papers there, right there. Just take one of those, put your name on it, and then you can stick it in our offering basket. Oh, this is a good one. Who was here last Sunday when we had our choir extravaganza? Woo! That was awesome. Thank you. I'd really especially like to thank the Unity Choir, who made great efforts to be such good hosts, to the choir from Grand Rapids. I'd like to thank Mama and Baba Naomi for spearheading the whole effort. Thank you. That was really, really fun, and I hope we can do that again, and perhaps they will invite us to go there, and then maybe we can go and sing at their church. I don't know. Finally, I wanted to let you know that Pastor Stephen Lamb is sick today, and so that affects a little bit of our junior and senior high activities for today. For Sunday school, in the second half of the service, the junior high Sunday school class will happen as usual in Pastor Stephen's office, so just normal thing. But the senior hires are going to stay with the adults, which is actually, this is a great day that this happened, because I think that what Laura has prepared to share with us today will be interesting to you, so it's worth it to stay. Then this afternoon for youth group, this was one of the days when the boys meet in one place and the girls meet in another place. So the youth group boys activity has been canceled, but the youth group girls activity, which I believe is at Carrie DeSalm's house across the street, is still happening at the usual time. And if you have any questions, probably just text Stephen, because I don't know anything more than that. Are there any other announcements that I am forgetting? All right.
And now it's time for the kids to go to their classes and for the language groups to have their time together. So let's sing "Go Now in Peace" to bless them as they go. Okay, so we heard the preaching text in a story for children, and I'm going to read the teaching part of it for today from Mark chapter 5, verses 24 through 34. So this is the story that's embedded within that story of Jairus and his daughter. A large crowd followed Jesus and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had. And she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately, aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." We have the privilege of hearing from Laura Crabill today for a sermon, and I will pray a blessing on her as she begins. God, thank you for being at work in Laura as she prepared for today, and we thank you that you are here with her and in her. And I pray that we can be receptive to what you have given to her today. In Jesus' name, amen.
I was asked by the pastors to share with you my story of healing. This is not easy for me, since I was barred from entry into this church for 12 years. Now that I'm clean again, I've been welcomed back to share my story. Jesus healed me. That's the good news. But I don't feel right sharing my story of healing without you first knowing what it was like for me to be sick. I don't blame you. I know it's unlawful to have someone unclean in the sanctuary. And many of you weren't even around 12 years ago when I was kicked out. But it was the most dehumanizing experience a person can have. You see, I wasn't just unclean, I felt dead. "But Janet," you say, "we gave you food and we never physically hurt you. You had what you needed to survive." Sure, I had food most days, but physical survival is different from emotional survival. Being pushed out of society is worse than death. And yet I knew if I took my own life, that would be an even greater sin. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me tell you how it all began. I married Jeff right after college. He was a great husband, an amazing provider. Our combined incomes, with him working in investment and me as a school nurse, meant that we lived well. I was living the dream. I remember the first day I got a real paycheck. It was a bright fall afternoon, and I was gliding down the street with this check to the bank, finally able to be an adult and support myself. And things were good for a while until the bleeding began. It's embarrassing to talk about, but 1 month I started bleeding and it never stopped. At first I was annoyed. You women understand this. You don't have your usual energy, and cramps mean you sometimes have to miss work. Advil helped, but the bleeding didn't stop. I went to the doctor, at first not telling Jeff, since I didn't want him to be worried about me. But when I started sleeping on the sofa instead of our bed, he got worried, and he demanded I tell him what was going on. Remarkably, he didn't seem that upset when I told him. He knew we couldn't share a bed, but he convinced me that the doctors would help find a cure. And he promised not to tell anyone, since he didn't want people thinking his wife was damaged. So I went to one doctor, and then another, and another. Each doctor had a different idea about what the problem was, and I spent a ridiculous amount of money on tests and medicine, herbs. And sanitary pads aren't cheap when you have to buy them by bulk every week. I became desperate, and I Googled everything I could find, tried all the folk remedies, and I prayed harder than ever. But things just got worse. I felt like I must be a failure in God's eyes. My faith just wasn't strong enough to receive healing. As the months passed and nothing helped, Jeff became closed off. I would catch him staring at me over the kitchen table with this expression of fear and disgust. I couldn't stand being looked at like that. Eventually, I noticed he stopped sitting in the chairs that I would sit in and wouldn't touch me. This went on for a couple of years. Can you imagine what that feels like? I felt like an animal. No, worse than that, I felt like I was dead. It was like we were in prison together. The friends that I had confided in deserted me when their prayers didn't work. Finally, the word got out here at church and school, and then it was really over. I got a call from one of the elders, by phone, of course, that I was no longer welcome at church. The elder was as kind as she could be, but reminded me that until I was clean, I couldn't come to church. I wouldn't want to risk infecting others, would I? I cried on the carpet all that morning. Later that afternoon, the principal of my school called. I was resting on the sofa when I heard his voice on the voicemail. I didn't have strength to pick up the phone. I was fired for my job through voicemail. Just like that. No words of concern or care. Just matter-of-fact firing. I wouldn't want to infect children, would I? That would be unthinkable. For a year or so after that, I just stayed in my apartment, mostly in bed. Jeff bought stuff for me, drove me to doctor's appointments, but he was closed off emotionally. One day, 3 years after the bleeding began, I found a note from him. He wrote a note saying he was sorry, but he didn't have it in him to deal with a sick wife. His career was on the line, and he'd be fired if they found out he was living with an unclean woman. No one would want to invest with a man whose wife was being punished by God. That could wreck a career. I didn't have money to stay in the apartment without Jeff's income. So I sold my furniture on Craigslist and packed a suitcase, took the bus to Cincinnati where my parents live. I remember my dad answering the door. But instead of the warm welcome I normally received, his eyes widened and he kept the door mostly shut. "I can't let you in, Janet. Jeff told us about your sickness. I'm sorry, but you have to be clean before you can come in here." I was shocked. "Dad, how can you reject your own daughter?" "Daughter," he said, "you're not my daughter anymore. You're stained with sin. Get away from here and straighten your life out." And just like that, he shut the door on me, leaving me trembling on the doorstep. Now I had no one to turn to, nowhere to go. I had hit rock bottom. With the last of my money, I took the bus back to Chicago and started sleeping in the tent city on Lower Wacker Drive. I begged for food. During the day, I panhandled for change along Michigan Street or slept on the Red Line to stay warm at night. Now I was the one that others glided by on their way to work. I relied on the kindness of strangers to keep me alive. And I would get food and sanitary pads from the food pantry every week. I didn't have energy to do more than just sit. I lost a lot of weight. One time I remember seeing my reflection in a shop window, and I didn't even recognize myself. My hair was a mess. My bones were sticking out. But more than anything else, I just looked haunted. I remember being hungry for touch during those nights on the streets, just as much as I was hungry for food. Sometimes I lied to others and did things I'm not proud of as a way to cope. I started taking drugs as a way to deal with the isolation and the boredom. Sometimes I slept in shelters, but after being mugged once and getting bed bugs another time, I felt safer in the tent city. So now you know where I was when Jesus showed up. I had heard about him from others in the tent city. There was this amazing prophet in town who could heal people. He was on his way through Chicago, headed to Gary, Indiana, and was preaching on the South Side. Well, I was ready to try anything, and I scraped together the money that I could to take the bus down to St. James AME Church. I made it there just in time to see this huge crowd walking along the street towards the church. I spotted Jesus quickly because of the peace that he radiated and the purpose with which he walked. And it wasn't that hard to get close to him. Everywhere I went now, people moved out of the way. I looked like a ghost. There were some other unclean people there, druggies and people with mental illnesses that were harder to get through, but I managed with my height to push through them. And I reached over and I brushed Jesus' shoulder as he walked by. I don't know what compelled me to touch him. I just had this feeling that I had to do it. I didn't want to draw attention to myself, so I hoped that I would just be able to touch him and he would keep moving. But as soon as my fingers brushed his t-shirt, I froze. And he froze too. And I felt this warmth going through my arm, down my body. And I felt my insides close up. And the knot that was in me was just released. People were still chattering around Jesus, but it was like I was in a slow motion movie and everything was moving silently around me. And then Jesus, with a booming voice, turned around and said, "Who touched me?" He scanned the crowd and we made eye contact for a moment. And then I just fell on the ground and started crying. As I lay with my face on the concrete, I poured out my story of being kicked out, of bleeding for 12 years, of being fired from my job, being on drugs. And I felt the crowd's condemnation on me. I was expecting someone to kick me. But Jesus leaned down and he said softly to me, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." Daughter. He called me daughter. Somebody claimed me, chose me. I had a place in society. And Jesus said, "My faith made me well." I didn't think I had very much faith. All I did was reach out and touch him. But that was enough. I didn't need to pray harder or be a better person. I don't know why I had to wait 12 years. All I know is that I reached out and Jesus healed me. I kept following Jesus. How could I not? He walked everywhere and I tagged along. And some of the people who traveled with him treated me like I was in their family. With the bleeding stopped and the new strength that I had, I was able to find a steady job through connections I made with Jesus' friends. And now, it's been a year since I've been back on my feet. And Jesus is continuing to work in my life. I don't know why it took so long for Jesus to show up. But the joy that I feel now almost makes that pain bearable. And the healing continues. I was physically healed in a moment, but now I'm doing the lifelong work of emotional and spiritual healing and forgiveness. And it's going to be a long journey. Thank you for listening.